Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's 6 o'clock on Dukes and Bell, the number one sports talk show in Atlanta for your ride home.
You strong? They said, I'm strong if you strong. I said, we strong, man.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
So earlier today, Mike was talking to Bo. We have the ability to literally be talking to you, however you're accessing the show, thank you. We're Dukes and Bell, and talk to our producers in the other room at the same time. You have to press this little special button. Mike didn't know his on button for the microphone was on, so he came out of that thinking he was still speaking to Bo, but his microphone was on, so he was speaking to you. So they turn his mic off, and they tell me, Mike's mic was still on, and I just did it because I was talking to them, and I just turned it on. I'm like, okay. Yes, we can do that. Hey, what do you know? It's Monday. What do you want us to do?
Yeah, I mean, look, we're trying to get through it. We're a little funky over our Atlanta United. What the heck's going on there? You'll hear Jason Longshore coming up at 6:20. A lot of stuff going on. I just told Carl, I'll try to find a way to clean up that story I just told you earlier. We'll get to that later in the week.
Hilarious.
But, man, what a weekend. Great weather here in Atlanta. And, unfortunately, the United match just very frustrated. Jason will try to make some sense of it. Meanwhile, you try to make some sense. And maybe I could probably retweet the same tweet every year. Everybody's overpaying every time a team, and we saw how much money some teams have in free agency to spend in their cap space. But, man, this year just bananas. It's one thing for some of the names, some of the marginal talents getting ridiculous numbers and resetting the market of their position.
Yeah, this report just out, according to Ian Rappaport, Cardinals are expected to sign former Ravens pass rusher T. Sizzle back home where he went to college.
Wow.
That's interesting, man. So, Suggs is apparently going back to Arizona.
Good dude. I don't know how much he's got left in the tank.
I don't either.
I mean, he's a beast. I mean, he's still a beast. And certainly, I mean.
Hall of Famer, man.
Yeah, and nice guy, too. We met him at the Super Bowl. But, yeah, the Nick Foles thing, a couple of guys are going round and round with us on Twitter here about that. You knew Foles was going to get paid. And, you know, you knew the Jacksonville Jaguars were one of the teams that were linked to him that made the most sense. You and I were just real quick going back and forth about the Antonio Brown thing. We'll give you all the updates on free agency. Is this a bad thing, though? With they're saying work stoppage, potential lockout in 2020 after the 2020 season. Are the NFL owners going to try to – is this the last – this year and the next year, the last year we're going to see this kind of spending? And then are NFL owners going to try to do what baseball owners were just trying to do? Or do you think this is going to continue to be the cap will continue to be a rocket ship to the moon and they'll keep spending like this?
No, remember, I mean, as long as the TV revenues continue to go up
– which they should –
Buccaneers agree to trade DeSean Jackson to the Eagles. That's funny. If the revenues continue to go up, Mike, then the salary cap should continue to go up. Baseball doesn't have a salary cap. You know, we talk about this. There's a luxury tax, and some teams have used that as an excuse to not spend, but it's a very lame one. And then because of the way it's constructed, it doesn't affect a whole lot of teams. And then the NBA obviously also has a luxury cap and a salary cap. I just think with the NFL, when you say the Antonio Brown, the bad thing about the Antonio Brown, the bad precedent, okay, was that the Raiders were willing to take a deal that had $30 million plus dollars on it, $38.9 million, rip it up, and give him a new $30 million deal in guaranteed money. Now, understand, he went from zero guaranteed money, and it was very unlikely that he was going to earn the $38.9 million that was still left on his contract. That's how these deals work in the NFL, but they're willing to do that. I think that is a bad precedent because it's what Julio attempted to do last year when he had 3 years left and went to the Falcons and said, look, we got to do something, right. And they bumped him up $4 million. But, Mike, they didn't rip it up and give him $40 million new guaranteed money.
No, it's bananas. And, again, the good news is Julio's new deal, whenever it goes down, can be structured. The signing bonus will take up the lion's share of it and maybe lower the cap hit. But getting back to Antonio Brown, two things. I don't think it's a good – no one debates Antonio Brown's talent and ability, but is it a good thing to basically quit on your team, you don't show up for the last game of the regular season, and then you find yourself getting a raise via a trade? The Steelers, who used to be considered maybe right there below, Carl, the Patriots, mm-hmm. as far as the organization really gets it, they screwed up the contract. We had one guy saying, how can the Steelers have $21 million in dead cap hit after they trade a guy? It's how they structured and how they wrote the language in the contracts of his contract extension. The Steelers screwed this thing up seven ways to Sunday. Then they put a gun to their own head and create an imaginary deadline of like midnight on Saturday, which, again, they didn't have to do.
You really have to be willing to move on from a player to take a $21 million cap hit. That's $21 million you can't do anything with this season. That's a problem.
I don't care. But that tell you what Antonio Brown has become on that team?
Well, I don't care how good you are. No, I think it just speaks to and let me tell you the positive part of this, and then we'll get to the top three. I mentioned this in the Duke's Dump today. It's online at 92.9 The Game, the podcast that's up, talking about the AB and Julio connection. The Steelers and the Rooneys, you know, listen, it's been their way or the highway, right, for the most part. You're going to come in, you're going to do things the right way. The Steelers, unlike the Patriots, do take care of their stars for the most part, right? Mm-hmm. They have done that over the years, and they've had a winning tradition. But, Mike, when you think about where they found Antonio Brown, and this is the part people forget, and this is the thing I want Falcon fans to understand. Mm-hmm. We always talk about the first round, second round, third round, and that's all nice and dandy. You shouldn't screw the first round up. If you do that, you should be fired as a general manager and a front office. Antonio Brown was a sixth round pick. Right. He was pick 195. Where'd he go to school? I bet you don't even know. Central Michigan. And then he's had the best 6 years of any wide receiver from a touchdown standpoint the last 6 years in the NFL. You can find talent and you can find difference makers. So the Steelers get a third and a fifth and everybody's going, they got robbed. If you're the Steelers front office, you're going, dude, we just found this guy 6 years ago in the 2010 draft. We're okay. We needed to get rid of this cancer out of our locker room.
But the idea that you lose Le'Veon Bell and now you lose a guy like these are two of the top players at their position.
It is.
You know, I mean, and I know that Connor can do certain things, but he can't do what Le'Veon Bell does. And now the question is, who takes the plunge on Le'Veon Bell? And remember, another guy that worked, played the system, you know, stuck to his guns. We all thought he was going to report at some point. He sits it out. And now the Jets apparently are having internal arguments about they want to roll the dice with Le'Veon Bell, who, with all these other signings being leaked, Le'Veon Bell, arguably the number one free agent, hasn't signed yet. Or at least there's no one's linked to him right now.
I'm not debating once you develop this talent, which they did with Le'Veon and Brown, that you're giving away a lot. What I am telling you is, there are some people who say, you know what, I trust the Steelers front office, and we're going to be all right. Now, the $21 million, that sucks, and that's going to hurt them immediately. But I just think that's the other aspect of this. There are some front offices that you would go, they got a third and a fifth, and they hadn't gotten it right in 25 years. You can't say that about the Steelers.
But this thing all goes back to how, you know, Tomlin was the guy. And I don't know if Mike Tomlin's going to be around much longer either.
I'm sorry?
I'm saying, Coach, you, and there's the article that came out a couple months back, you basically gave Antonio Brown an inch. He took a mile.
I don't understand.
Yes, and then Big Ben, you didn't squash the Big Ben hurt feelings when he started
playing
things out.
He's our quarterback, and I set a certain amount of rules for Big Ben, and I set a rules for our wide receivers as well.
Well, guess what, Coach? You've just lost two of the top players in the league. Good luck with that third and a fifth.
Remember, it's not my fault.
Yes, I would say, Coach, it's exactly your fault. You've created this culture. This locker room, you've lost the locker room. It's going sideways.
It's not my fault.
By the way,
Tomlin's like, it's not my fault.
There's a viral video a guy's done doing a Tomlin, doing like what Carl does, but it's kind of funny. He doesn't do as good of an impression of Tomlin as you, but he's got the big eyes bugging out. It's kind of cool.
It is, and he's sipping on the water, which Tomlin does that. Next question.
And he's like scanning from left to right like a mental patient.
But
anyway.
But to your point, man, and listen, this is why this was such a big deal over the weekend. We got to get to the top three, but the Antonio Brown redoing his deal changed the market for Julio Jones, just plain and simple. And if you thought, well, Julio was going to be the highest paid receiver anyway, now he is, but understand that's more money towards Julio that's going to take away from other places on your football team.
Well, again, Grady's going to get his deal. We knew that. Eventually, we're hoping. Right now, it's just it's.
Oh, and by the way, not to interrupt, pay him.
Yeah, it's a 10.
Because, again, you said you were. He balled out. You paid a man.
All right, but here's a problem. Vic Beasley's contract is still on the books, okay? Julio's market value is now $18 million to $20 million, according to D-Led, based on what you just said about Antonio Brown. So, again, if you're going to take all the guaranteed money and all this, you're going to have a quarter of your cap, potentially, dedicated to Julio and Matt. And you got guys on offensive line right now you couldn't basically pick out in a police lineup.
You can't. But here's the other way to look at it. And I don't know if we can achieve this. If Matt gives you 35 or more touchdowns and Julio gives you 10-plus, Mike, that's 45 touchdowns accounted for an offense that should be better under Dirk Cutter. If you look at it that way, we're scoring more points. We're better all the way around.
But again, if we can't run the ball, look, we were able to throw the ball and then eventually caught up with us because we couldn't run the ball.
Yep.
This offensive line has got to get fixed. We talked to Daniel Jeremiah. That's online at 929thegame.com from NFL Network. There's good offensive linemen there available in the second round. Please, Falcons, commit to O-line with one of your first two picks. Please, I'm begging you.
Let's get to the top three.
Let's hit some big three.
Thank you, Randy.
The top three stories of the day.
Can I count it all?
All right, I want to look into my crystal ball, and I do have one, and tell you that everything's going to be all right with Atlanta United. Unfortunately, my crystal ball is murky right now. I said, where was the urgency yesterday? Listen, we used to be killers. We used to be a team that had you down, and Mike, we were going to score three more goals and just stick our foot on your throat and say, we're better than you, and there's nothing you can do about it. Yesterday, we get up early, Joseph Martinez scores, and it's like...
Well, we didn't build off of that's for darn sure. Like, everybody's got a take on this. You'll hear the guy that does a great job with Mike Conte, Jason Longshore, coming up. Frank DeBoer is going through a learning curve. We're implementing a new system. It's not reinventing the wheel, but without Miggy. And I don't know, what would I asked the question on Twitter yesterday. Would Tata Martino get more out of Pity Martinez? What kind of system would we be running to find a way to get our guys the ball in space and make things happen? It's just, it's a very stagnant offense. It's a kind of soccer that makes people not want to watch soccer, to be quite honest with you right now.
It was a draw 1-1 against expansion. Cincinnati shouldn't have been. Brad Guzan had this to say after the match, talking about, listen, all this stuff everybody's talking about, it still comes down to us.
You can talk about systems. You can talk about formations. You can talk about whatever you want. At the end of the day, it's 11 guys that are competing against another 11. And more times than not this year, we haven't been good enough.
Should we have gone with four backs at the end to kind of seal this win? I mean, we all thought we were going to smoke these guys 4-1. We saw what Seattle did. They're an expansion team. It was great to see Greg Garza out there. Nice round of applause for Greg. But, man, this it's got everybody scratching their heads about when does this thing turn on? Carl, I think we got to look at it this way. A new coach, missing Miggy, compressed schedule, all these games in the CCL with the CONCACAF League. We'll be out there at the Gulch. Looks like Wednesday, by the way, before the game. It's just a terrible way to get the Frank DeBoer era rolling. Because of his past experience in Italy and England, not a lot of United fans giving him the benefit of the doubt right now.
Yeah, listen, I told you I was concerned last week. That concern continues. I'm not ready to run Frank out of town. We just got to get it right. And some adjustments and some flexibility has to be shown to hopefully get it right. Hey, story number two is free agency. Now, it hasn't started officially, and the league year starts on Wednesday. All these deals you're hearing about will become official. But, Mike, let's hit a couple of the big ones. Trey Flowers, deal with the Lions. That's his old coach, Matt Patricia. According to sources, it's going to be worth $16 to $17 million per season. Trey Flowers was arguably the Patriots' best defender. He gone.
Yep. Also, the Raiders signed their former offensive lineman, Trent Brown. He gets a big contract. Oakland again has lots of money to pay to help keep Carr upright to get the ball now to Antonio Brown. Nick Foles, $88 million, 50.1 guaranteed over 4 years to the Jaguars. Blake Bortles, needless to say, gets cut. You just mentioned earlier, DeSean Jackson going to be traded back to where he started with Philadelphia.
Interesting.
As Bruce Arians and I guess Todd Light, the GM down there, kind of shaking up the tree.
He wanted guaranteed money in a restructured deal. The Eagles apparently were willing to do that. That's why he's there.
According to Le'Veon Bell from Pro Football Talk, he is torn. I'm so torn right now. Decisions he wrote Monday, apparently on social media. So he's got some options, but nothing's happening right now.
All right, man. More about some free agent, as the next couple of days play out. And on Wednesday, we'll be all over it. What have the Falcons done? Nothing.
We ain't got no money.
Nothing. Well, keep saying it.
Well, now that the market is set, if you want to go out and get another offensive lineman, right? You want to go get another cheap. We all knew, and Thomas Dimitroff told everybody it was going to be an expensive lineman. We're going to be in that lower tier of free agency.
Yeah.
But right now, we barely have enough money to go get our draft class.
Hey, story number three is the Braves, man. We don't know if we're going to have closer by committee. Mike and I have been talking about this. Brian Snicker mentioned it. We're going to get more into this as the week goes on because I do think this is a big decision as we approach the start of the season. But Josh Donaldson, man, got some at-bats over the weekend. That was good to see.
I wanted to be aggressive. I hadn't seen live pitching in probably about a week or so. I wanted to see where my timing was at. Wasn't quite to where I wanted it to be yet, but I was, you know, able to see some pitches, lay off some pretty tough pitches, and felt like I saw the ball pretty well.
Donaldson playing third base today. The Bravos beat the Pirates 6-2. He goes 1-for-2 with an RBI. So he's out there doing his thing.
And Tookie was good today as well, guys. 4 innings pitched. He's been good in his last couple of outings. You said Kyle Wright. I say Tookie at either one of those guys maybe in the rotation to start the season.
Kyle less effective today. Tookie was better today. Also, we find out from Brian Snitker it's going to be closer by committee, Vizcaino and Minter to start the season, he says.
All right, guys. Jason Longshore answers, hopefully, some things that you're wondering about when it comes to Atlanta United. You'll hear it next on Dukes and Bell.
Martinez scores! It's time for our Monday Atlanta United recap with 92.9 The Game soccer analyst Jason Longshore on Dukes and Bell.
All right, guys, we're going to dive a little bit deeper into what's going on with our Atlanta United with the analyst for our club. His name is Jason Longshore. If you're new to the program, follow him at Longshore on Twitter. And he joins us in studio this week. First things first, yesterday's match, before we get into some, you know, tactics and formations and all the things that everybody wants to talk about. Second half, my opinion, sloppy, flat, no sense of urgency, and it cost us. What was your opinion of the inability to really finish a team that was not doing anything, literally for, you know, 70 minutes of the match?
Sloppy, 100% sloppy, and I think that's tired legs. I really do at the end, because I wouldn't say flat, no urgency. I think part of the problem is this team's in its own head a little bit right now in terms of, you want to build possession. You want to control possession. You want to connect the easy passes, make the simple pass. I'm close to you. I'm going to play you the ball. Sometimes to open things up, you have to make the more difficult ball. Sometimes you have to even play long to give the ball away to win it back in a counter press. Right now, it feels like it's always the same tempo. And that's not what will work against the team in Cincinnati, who gave up a goal early and said, you know what, we don't want to get run out of the building. We're going to sit back and defend and make life difficult for you. And they did.
It is our man Jason Longshore. Follow him at Longshore. And again, guys, we're right back in action for Monterey. We've got to score four goals, by the way, on Wednesday night in the CCL. Here's the thing. Everybody's got a theory. All the soccer heads where I sit in section 208. Obviously, we knew we were going to miss Miggy. But is Miggy's speed and what he does, is there any way that Tito Villalba can kind of give you some of that? And where was he yesterday?
Don't know where he was yesterday other than the bench. Not sure what the option is there. Miguel Almiron is a special player. And what Atlanta United had in 2017 especially, where they were still figuring it out, where they were in this type of frame where it's all about building a philosophy. And you're going to have bumpy patches in it. What you always had then was speed. You could play over the top and just keep it simple and let Miguel and let Tito run onto something and see what happens. You don't have that right now. That's not PT Martinez's game. That's not Ezequiel Barco's game. They want the ball. They want to combine. They want to dribble. They're not going to be looking for that ball over the top. You have to play to them. Their back is to goal. Then they have to combine. There's so many pieces that have to work right now. When it's working, it can look great, as it did against Herediano in the second leg. When it's not working, it looks very static and it looks very bland at times. And that's not what we associate with Atlanta United.
Joseph sprints off the pitch yesterday. How frustrated do you think he is? And was that just a function of us in a match that we felt like we should have won? Or is that a culmination of what we've seen over the last four or five matches?
I think you have to understand the Latin player. There's this thing here about after a soccer game, and you see it whether it's at, you know, Silverbacks Park with the old Atlanta Silverbacks or in the second division or other MLS cities, where, you know, it's still looked at as a very fan-friendly, get the kids out, got to go shake hands with the kids. Look, that's not how it's played around the rest of the world. You don't expect Matt Ryan, after having a bad day, to hang around and take selfies, right? You know? And Joseph Martinez should not be expected to do the same. Leandro Gonzalez Pires left quickly. They're angry. They don't want to lose matches. That's completely normal. I think that's a good thing. I'd feel worse if they were hanging around and everything looked like it didn't bother them.
Jason Longshore here breaking it down for us as Atlanta United. By the way, no one is running away if you're worried about just two games into the MLS season. Everybody in the Eastern Conference is basically in the same boat. We're just 3 points out of first place. That said, all right, so what are we going to do here? I mean, are we going to have to really wait till after the Philadelphia Union game to have those 2 weeks to rest our guys up? I mean, is this where our lot in life is? We just can't seem to get things cooking, and the only thing that's going to make things better is rest?
I think you take Wednesday's game as an opportunity to see if there's something different you can do on Sunday against Philadelphia. It's not must win on Sunday, but it kind of has that feel to it, right? Because of the vibe right now. It's not in terms of the standings. It's not in terms of the playoffs. It is in terms of changing the narrative. And I think a win Sunday before that two-week break would be really critical. And you're facing a Philadelphia Union squad, right, that has looked really bad, very bad defensively, and they're missing their playmaker who's suspended due to red card.
And just to follow up, so I know you've talked about this with Mike on the broadcast. Is this just the worst way you could start your career in running an MLS team if you're Frank DeBoer, because of how the schedule played out?
In terms of the schedule, yeah, it's incredibly difficult, because you're having to, whether you like it or not, and I know the conversation at the beginning was evolution, not revolution, you're not making major changes. Once you get into it, without Miguel Almiron, it's a very different team. It has a different personality. And you have to then get used to Pity Martinez and the personality he brings to you on the field. He didn't win South American Player of the Year like on a fluke. The guy's a player. He just got called up to play next to Lionel Messi with the Argentina national team. But he's not settled yet. You can see it. He's not comfortable. He's not on the same page with his teammates yet in terms of combination play. That takes time. Okay. It's easy when you bring in a new player who has the speed element and you can play over the top and keep it simple. With a guy like Pitti, you've got to figure out how to get the best out of him and how he can get the best out of his teammates.
It is Jason Longshore joining us. Folks tweeting at me going, Dukes, have Longshore convince me to get off or not to get on the DeBoer out train, which is something that was tweeting yesterday or trending.
Right.
And I appreciate this, but I have to ask, how flexible is our manager? And what does he have to do to help us be more of an attacking style team? I get the Pitti part of it. Mm-hmm. I understand the players aspect of it. But what does our manager have to do? What is his responsibility in this?
That's what we're going to have to find out, because right now it's not working. And the match yesterday was the worst match we've seen so far. You'd think it'd be edging to the better side of things.
Right.
Yesterday felt like a step back. And the biggest thing for me, I think we get really hung up on formation. And this was something that we talked about yesterday. I don't think the formation matters right now. I think it's a bigger problem than that.
Okay, so Jace, real quick, not to interrupt, because we got soccer fans and United fans listening right now, and they're going, okay, this is all we're talking about. So you're saying the 4-3-4, all that doesn't really
matter. The 3-4-3
doesn't matter.
Is not the issue, because you can be in a – let's take last year, for example. 3-5-2. You came out and you started in a 3-5-2. You were a very attack-minded 3-5-2.
Mm-hmm.
Postseason, you were not an attack-minded 3-5-2. It's the same formation.
Tata pivoted, changed the strategy a bit,
but it's
right?
the same formation. Right. That we're right. we get hung up on formation. Like, that defines the tactics. That defines the philosophy. No. The philosophy is number one. The philosophy is possession. Right now, the problem is that possession is not leading to chances, because you can't get behind a low-block defense. You can't get behind a team like Cincinnati that plays four with three midfielders in front. There's no penetration, whether it's from wide or from through ball centrally or over the top. Zero. So when you're not penetrating, you can put them in a 4-3-3, 4-4-2, 3-5-2. It doesn't matter if you're not creating chances.
All right, Jason Longshore is here trying to get us off the ledge. Everybody wants to know, what's the secret then? How do we get Pitti in a place to succeed? How does Barco use his amazing skill set to do things? Are we going to have to get Breck Shea off the pitch? Because it seems like he's a stop sign right now.
Breck Shea's struggling at the moment. I thought Breck Shea was really effective against Arellano in the second leg. He's played a lot of minutes since then. George Bello is a guy who can stretch a team a little bit with his speed.
Escobar going to make things better?
Yeah, because he's a guy who can stretch a team with his speed. I mean, compare Escobar to Gressel. Gressel's not getting in behind players. Escobar is. And right now, Pitti, Barco, Joseph, that's not their game. They're not trying to get in behind guys. You need the guys out wide to get behind the outside backs of the opposition. That forces them to get stretched out. That creates more opportunity centrally. It's all about that movement. And yesterday, you look at it, it's very static. And that's a problem, because it's easy for the defense. They keep everything in front of them. It's hard to create chances, hard to create shots.
Now, I'm glad you said that, because, you know, I said yesterday's match was boring. And that's my opinion, you know, from what I'm used to seeing, okay? And I think what you just said, we made it easy for them to play that way, and the style that ultimately played out was boring because of it. Everyone I'm talking to around the country, Jason, just said exactly what you just said, and that is, get our guys out wide, right? Create those opportunities. And I'm going, okay, listen, I've never managed a soccer club in my life, but I know enough people in soccer who continue to tell me this. Why can't we do that?
Well, one reason you haven't been able to do it is George Bello was hurt after the first leg of the Arellano series, and Franco Escobar hasn't been available since the first day of training camp. That's a problem, because Breck Shea's not a guy who's going to stretch the back line. Julian Gressel's not a guy who stretches the back line. Julian Gressel's a guy who really helps you in other ways, and Breck Shea does as well, but they're not guys to stretch a team out. And when you have a lot of players who want the ball at their feet and they're looking to combine or play sideways, it's tough when a team sits deep.
Right. You know, we've talked about, you know, the great job that Darren Eales has done, winning all the accolades, executive of the year, and him and Carlos, fantastic job. And then we saw last night, and yeah, great job by the crowd to give Greg Garza a nice round of applause.
Yes, that was outstanding.
And I understand we made money, and it made sense at the time, but I mean, do we miss a guy like Garza right now as well?
Yeah, I mean, to a degree.
Oh, just because the overall concern with Greg is, as much as we love him, he just can't stay healthy, yeah. So it made sense to move on.
I mean, you're missing him because you had Bello get injured. And I think that's the biggest thing here, is if you have George Bello from game one, and people got on Bello in Herediano because it's your first game under a new manager on the road in Costa Rica on an unfamiliar surface, right. And Bello was okay. Bello had one mistake that committed a foul, then led to a free kick and a goal. Bello was okay. And he's 17 years old. He's going to get better when he plays. But what he gives you is he can stretch a team out because of his speed. You have to take that into account if you're defending it. Atlanta has to find a way, whatever shape you're in, to go from being a possession team but mix up the tempo some. What it felt like yesterday, you talk about it being boring.
Yes.
What it felt like yesterday is you go to the orchestra and the conductor keeps the orchestra at the same tempo for 2 hours.
Yes.
You have to speed it up and slow it down. If it's all the same, it's predictable. If you speed it up sometimes, put your foot on the gas and go fast,
right.
Even if it's Julian going down the wing against traffic, okay. See what happens, then play off of that. Play a ball over the top to win the second ball. You have to change the tempo sometimes, or it gets predictable.
They kind of did that in the second half down in Mexico, right, against Monterrey for a bit.
In that 15-20-minute span where I thought they played as well as they've played in 2019, where they took the game's initiative and put Monterrey on the ropes a little bit, they were doing that, and they were going over the top a little bit. Pity Martinez was flaring out to the wing because he could find space there to operate. You're not doing that enough right now. And it's just not consistent enough. And that has to change. And this is a team with so much firepower, they have to find a way to get past teams that play a low block. We've seen it before.
Yeah,
we've talked about it before. They have to find the way with this group of players to do it.
Okay. Jason, thank you for... I just stepped back a few feet off the ledge, okay?
A few feet? Did I get you back a few feet?
A few feet, okay?
Are you still looking?
I mean, yes, like I said, I'm still looking because I'm concerned.
It's a good thing. It's a good thing to have these discussions, though.
It's just it's so tough when you... I feel like I got a jet ski in a bathtub right now with this team.
Jason Longshore, we'll be down there. We're working on it, as a matter of fact, to be down there broadcasting on Wednesday for the Monterrey match. Thank you, sir. Great job. Follow him. Longshore. I hope he helped you like he just helped me.
Moore was cool, and then you see, oh, wait, Sean Connery is way cooler than Roger Moore, and that's why I'm a Sean Connery guy, man. I'm going to go with Goldfinger. Hey, man, you're on the radio, bro. What's your favorite Bond movie?
I kind of like Skyfall, but I love to say Octopussy.
Thank you, and you just did.
Yes, you did. Bo, where did that rank, by the way? What was in the top 10? What was that movie?
Skyfall?
No, the other one.
That movie's horrible.
Yeah, it was one of the worst.
Say it. Say it.
I did say it. You had to be listening at 4:40 every day.
Right.
Yeah, man. Nah, man.
Yeah, man.
Good job, Jeremiah.
Yeah, that was a terrible, terrible movie. By the way, guys, real quick, Falcons. CBS Sports reporting Kevin Pamphile is a tackle. We're trying to figure, is he a tackle or is he a guard from Tennessee? Well, he played for the Buccaneers.
There's a tackle but plays guard, right?
Right?
Is that right?
Or what's he listed as?
Everything I see, he's listed as a tackle. He's played, let's see, he played left guard, right tackle, left guard, tackle. So he can play both. He's a swing.
All right, there you go.
Well, Dan Quinn likes those guys.
Hey, now.
What, swingers?
No, swing guys.
Yeah,
cross-trained guys.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a dude who's experienced in the offense of Dirk Cutter, so we'll see where it goes. It's not the worst thing. He's 28. He gets good, not great rankings from the nerds at Pro Football Focus, for those that are wondering.
Okay, man. Listen, this fits the mold of the kind of player we might go after. I will say this. And again, I just think that, being around the NFL as long as I have, it's about relationships. Dirk Cutter knows what he can do. I think Dirk Cutter's probably a guy that's sitting there going, he's a guy that can help us and may not cost us a lot of money. Either way, Mike, I like the age. I do like that. He's not a 32 or 33-year-old guy. So we'll see where it goes. But that's the report that we may be interested in him.
Kevin Pamphile, 28, most recently with the Tennessee Titans. Hey, man, you're on the radio, bro. What's your favorite James Bond movie?
Hey, man.
Hey, man.
Hey, I'm just saying, I'm a millennial. I played GoldenEye on N64 back in the day.
Mm. Yeah, but Pierce Brosnan. Remember that movie GoldenEye, the Russian lady?
GoldenEye.
She's bigger than he is. Like, he's rolling around with her. She's twice the size of him. He's a little guy.
Who was the
Tina Turner sung the song.
No, I know Tina Turner made that. The song was great, the soundtrack. But I'm trying to think, who was his love interest in that one?
It was the little Russian girl that was working at the radar station. Remember that, the GoldenEye thing?
Anya Topp?
But Anya Topp was the Russian. Was that Bridget Monaghan?
Was it her?
Or Famke Johnson, who went on to play in the X-Men. Right?
Now you got me curious. It was
Look it up.
All right.
I think it's Famke Johnson, but she's like, what's your name? He goes, I am Anya Topp. Anya Topp? On the top. Hey, man, you're on the radio, bro. What do you got for your favorite James Bond movie?
Hey, man.
Hey, man.
Let me see. For me, it's Die Another Day with Pierce Brosnan and Halle Berry. But also, too, any James Bond movie with Jaws, the first white guy to sport an all-ice grill before any rapper.
Very good, yes. Jaws, of course, was dispatched to the spy who loved me.
That's why I love it.
By Kurt Juergens, who played a great bad guy as Stromberg.
Hey, man. By the way, he scared you. Jaws, at that point, woo!
Yeah. Now, Moonraker was a crappy Bond movie. Jaws was also in that one. Hey, man, you're on the radio, bro. What do you got for your favorite James Bond movie?
Hey, man.
Hey, man.
Hey, I think I was just like you are. I grew up with the Spy Who Loved Me was my first one, but I'm a Daniel Craig guy now. Skyfall.
I love Skyfall. Good. Plus, what's his name?
Who, the wrestler?
Javier Bardem was a great bad guy in Skyfall. He was playing, you know, he's the one, remember, he had the blonde hair, a little funky. But he plays the bad guy in Skyfall.
I thought you were talking about Batista. Batista's also in that one, isn't he?
No, that was Spectre. That's Spectre. Hey, man, you're on the radio, bro. What's your favorite James Bond movie?
Any Bond movie where you put Christopher Lee and Hervé Villechaize against Bond is awesome in my book. Man with the golden gun.
I don't know. You know what the best part of that one is, Carl?
What's that?
Is the blonde girl that was, the Swedish actress. Beautiful little thing. Look it up, Squid. By the way, Famke Johnson was Xenia Onatopp
in
GoldenEye. Hey, man, you're on the radio, bro.
IMDb.
That's what you get.
I always look. I was trying to find it, and it finally popped up.
Hey, man, what do you got for your favorite James Bond movie?
My Carl, look here. Well, you can get cable and Morpheus sales around about 9 to 3, but look here, my cousin Bobby Lee stayed up in Hoover. He had cable first. My favorite movie was Octopussy, and I love the fight.
I'm going to stop it right there, Carl.
I think that's a good idea. Although he did. Bo, what was the movie he was talking about?
Say it, Bo. By the way, Britt Eklund as Mary Goodnight, Carl, in The Man with the Golden Gun.
Okay.
The beautiful Britt Eklund.
Yes. Man with the Golden Gun was good.
Eh, it wasn't that good. You're on the radio, buddy. What
Come
do you
on,
got?
Man. It was
no,
good.
It's the 70s.
It was good. And you're right. For the 70s, it was good.
AMC Matador? Come on. You can't have a James Bond car chase in an AMC car. Hey, man, you're on the radio, bro. What do you got for your favorite Bond movie?
They didn't know any better.
Hey,
no, they paid money to use that crappy car.
That's what happened.
Hey, man, what do you got?
They had a Ford in the Golden Casino Royale movie, right?
In a rental car.
That's the point. But Ford paid to be in there.
Yeah, but I'm saying, but AMC was a lousy car. Hey, man, you're on the radio, bro. What do you got?
Hey, man.
Hey, man.
Hey, For Your Eyes Only was my favorite Bond movie. Roger Moore was my favorite Bond character. And the title track, For Your Eyes Only, that's one of my favorite pop songs of the 80s. That's a good song.
It was. It was catchy.
Sheena Easton. That's not
catchy.
A bad flick. That one is the one also, Carl, that they're dealing with the Greeks, and they got the civil, they got like the good guys, bad guys. They're in Albania, and they have this big attack scene where they bring the sailboat up and they blow up the whole dock. It's pretty cool. That's you know what I'm talking about, For Your Eyes Only. Hey, man, you're on the radio, bro. What do you got for your favorite Bond movie?
Hey, man.
Hey, man.
Definitely going to stick with Skyfall, following the trend. However, I do have a soft spot for Live and Let Die. Little Bayou boat chase.
Yeah.
You
That's
know,
right.
When I was a kid, you and I have talked That's about right. this before, what we both like Bond movies. I wanted to go to all those places that James Bond went.
Well, he was so international.
But that was my thing. When I got older and I actually got a chance to do it, I wanted to try to hit as many spots that James Bond's been. And I haven't been to the pyramids, but I've been everywhere else.
Yeah. Listen, all those very scenic scenes in the mm-hmm. movies really made Bond special.
Hey, man, you're on the radio, bro. What do you got for your favorite James Bond movie?
Hey, man. Great memories. I remember being a teenager, Duran on the radio, and I went at least 5 times and saw A View to a Kill.
Christopher Walken as the bad guy, Zorin, in that one.
A View to a Kill.
And yes. Grace Jones was the henchwoman.
Yeah, that's Grace's height.
Right.
Right? She was doing all kind of stuff.
I got time for one more, Craig? I got to roll. Got one more. Hey, man, you're on the radio, bro. What's your favorite Bond movie? You're on the air with Dukes and Bell, man. What you got?
Hey, man, I got Thunderball. Sean Connery.
Boom.
Okay. Good call.
See, I just like the old 60s ones with Connery now. Granted, different time, different generation.
Yeah.
But the first time you heard the music, first time you said Bond, James Bond, Dr. No one mentioned, which is, you know, doesn't really have a lot of action by today's standards, but it was pretty cool.
Here's the thing. If you played all the Bond themes, would you be able to remember what movie it went to?
Yeah. Yeah, I could probably hang a lad.
We might do that one day. All right, big Bond fans. They're working on Bond 25, by the way. All right, we'll come back.
Because Octopussy is, you're an all-time high.
That's right. Yeah. We'll come back. We'll clear our throats, man. We'll tell you what's coming up on the show tomorrow. We're looking at being out at the Gulch on Wednesday for Atlanta United's match in CONCACAF Champions League against Monterrey. We'll tell you more about that as well here on Dukes and Bell.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.